Hi there, and greetings to everyone seeking and hoping to find the true meaning of life, those sick and tired of this poisonous world whose soul and spirit are bleeding, and of the emptiness and futility of this materialistic civilization. Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Welcome to our world of supreme love and immortality, where all human hopes are fulfilled. Welcome to the world of Orthodox Christian spirituality, a world now unknown to the West, which once had the key, but lost it a long time ago, the key that has an answer to every question. My name is monk Arsenije Jovanović. I live in the monastery of Ostrog, Montenegro. It is never too easy to talk on spiritual issues, especially when it has to be in foreign language, which is English to me. I apologize in advance for possible mistakes. However, I believe God will help me to say the word and you to understand it. So, let us embark on our waves. Good evening, dear listeners. We are again together in one of our radio shows called The Way, The Life, The Truth. As you know, usually I talk about many things, mostly about my life, but sometimes we have a nice opportunity to talk to somebody else. This time we have this pleasure to talk to Mr. Stanislav Kuš, or today's Orthodox Christian brother Nikolai. We are sitting in his monastic cell, in our skit of St. John the Baptist in Montenegro. This skit is, for our listeners who don't know, the skit is actually in Orthodox Christian monasticism, let's say smaller monastery that is dependent to the bigger one that cares about it, and it is more secluded, more withdrawn from the tumult of the world, and it is more hesychastic orientated, as we say, which means that it is more prayer and more silence in this kind of monastic habitation. So we have, as I said, this pleasure to talk to Brother Nikolai, who is actually a Polish nationality. But in the meantime, and we will hear about that, he discovered Orthodox Christian faith and he became Orthodox Christian. And even more than that, he is now a novice. A novice is somebody who is actually preparing to be a monk one day. So, Brother Nikolai, hello and greetings from us and from the listeners of our radio.
Hello. Actually, I become Orthodox Christian because at one time, which was about more than 30 years ago, I was asking myself, because I had practically all my financial needs and everything was fulfilled, and I didn't know what to take the next steps in my life. So I asked myself what to do next, and I said some people taking drugs, some people womanizing, some people doing the other things. So I said, well, I should search for God. Even if I don't find the God, even if it will take me to the rest of my life, well, if I don't find the God, I didn't lose nothing. But if I found him, I will find everything. So I was really digging and searching very, very hard and deeply. And apparently I come through all these strange books of about Buddhism, about Hinduism, about yogas and things like that. But I think,
Brother Nikolai, we'll come to this point a little bit later.
Okay.
Let's just inquire a little bit, and for our listeners, where are you coming from? Tell us a little bit about your homeland, about your family, about the influence over there, which was your religious background. Tell us a little bit about...
My religion background was actually Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. I was a Roman Catholic. But I wasn't practicing Roman Catholicism.
Where were you born?
I was born in Warszawa.
Warszawa.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And well, because of course, several reasons, I wasn't really happy with Roman Catholic religion. And
what about your family? Were they churchgoers?
They were churchgoers. My mother was a very pious person. She mm-hmm. was praying very often. Mm-hmm. But I was sort of not... I didn't like to go to church at all. And my
when,
mother...
When were you born? When?
In 1942 in Warszawa. Uh-huh. It was one of probably the most terrible places at the time in the world. Mm-hmm. And the main reason, actually, I didn't want to go to church was simply because I saw such a terrible catastrophe which happened to the people of Warszawa and so on. And I said, the God, if would see all this, he wouldn't allow to happen something like that. So, but afterwards, you know, when I start searching and ask myself about the purpose of the true life, I come through different religions, and finally I come back through Christianity. And I think this is because of the prayers of my mother. She was praying all the time about for me and so on. And always when I was reading some books about the different religions, I always had in the back of my mind the Christ. Mm-hmm. So when I come, for instance, across the Orthodox religion, and apparently I find a very thin book about Serafin Sarovsky, it really touched my heart very deeply, because it was the about the story was about the Holy Spirit, which was described by the Serafin Sarovsky talking with the Motovilov. Mm-hmm. And I said, my God, this is something just incredible. This is so deep and so fantastic. And Serafin Sarovsky immediately opened my heart to Orthodoxy. So, and the next book I read, it was about the Russian pilgrim, which was traveling.
When that was? When?
Just over 30 years ago.
Over 30 years ago.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I start praying very deeply and fasting and so on and so on. And I come through a very powerful spiritual experience, because actually, first of all, I opened the Bible and I start reading the God says, I am that I am. And I sort of couldn't understand what that doesn't mean. I said, it is impossible for me to understand something like that. And I was praying, and all of a sudden, when I was crossing the intersection, I saw, for instance, crowd of the people. And at this moment, I saw all these people shining, and I had such a tremendous feeling of love towards these people.
You were in the car?
No, I was just... it was the pedestrian crossing.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And it was the plenty of people in the intersection.
Yes.
And I couldn't see really faces of these people. I just the shape of it, you know. But the light was tremendous. It was much brighter than the sun. And the experience could sort of go on a little bit longer, I would die out of love, you know. And I didn't know really what happened to me. And the next day I come to the one of the bookshops, and I find this very, very thin book of the Seraphim of Sarov. And when I read it, I was absolutely stunned, because actually it was my experience over there, but maybe from a little bit different point of view and a different surrounding, of course.
Where did it happen? Warsaw?
No, it was in Australia.
In Australia.
Yes.
But tell us a little bit about your life in youth. How what did you do? What did you study? How it was? How did you grow?
Well, I was I studied music. I used to write poems and so on, and then of course I didn't. I used to play the clarinets, classical music and so on, but actually it wasn't money in it, so I got married very early and I had to do something more practical.
Yeah.
So I get into the building industry, and of course afterwards I just migrated to Australia, which was in...
When did you do that?
In the late 60s, it was 67, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, of course...
Together with your wife?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I migrated to Australia, which was at the time fantastic country, because it was not really many people. It was plenty of work and the money was good and... Mm-hmm. Everybody could, who was really trying to work hard, could establish himself,
mm-hmm.
no problem. And of course,
did you have children at that time?
No. Actually, my wife, she had a problem. I think she exposed herself too much to the sun. Because she was every so often going to the beach, and she developed brain cancer.
Oh.
And of course, she was about, at the time, 32 or something like that, you know. She was a very beautiful woman, and when it happened, and then I find out, you know, because she had a terrible headaches,
yes.
and so on and so on. And the doctors, you know, they just find out that she had two tumors, and they decide that she would be operated. But I just was so shocked, and I start praying like crazy. And of course, I didn't want her to be operated. I wanted God to help me.
Mm.
Of course, I was a very, very tough man. And the doctor told me that I should tell her about her problem. So when I come to tell her, and I thought that my heart will break. And I told her, and then I start praying and praying and praying. And the neurosurgeon, when he comes, it was the best neurosurgeon in Australia. And I asked him, doctor, is it any other chance that she can be cured without any operation? Because actually she had a tumor in the middle of the brain, so after the operation she should be a vegetable. And he said, no, This is the only way. And I started making sort of funny conversation with him, and I didn't really want to that she would agree for operation, and he called me ignorant, you know. And I said, "Are you bloody butcher?" You know. And of course, it didn't come to operation.
Mm-hmm. Were you Orthodox at that time?
No.
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 Not yet.
And of course, actually, it didn't operation didn't take place, and slowly and gradually she was getting better, and everything just disappeared.
Really?
Yes.
That's
and incredible. She's now, for instance, in Poland, she's 2 years older than me, but she looks around about 50.
My God. Beautiful.
And
so what happened? You divorced finally? I mean, because you're not living together, or it happened when you converted to faith that you agreed to separate?
I didn't quite catch what you just said.
I mean, how come you're not together anymore? Did you divorce?
Well, no. Actually, because Father, first of all, I must say that I was, just because of what happened to my wife, I start searching for deeper in the religion.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't really interested in it.
Uh-huh.
She stayed as a lukewarm Roman Catholic. Of course, I find to her the best spiritual father. He runs the Franciscan monastery for three monasteries in Poland.
Uh-huh.
And he looked after her, and she said, "I am not interested really in Orthodoxy," and so on, because Orthodoxy is in the same time crossed, hardship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she loved the easy life. It's my fault, you know. It's my fault. because I was a really great provider for her.
So,
most probably, I spoil her, yeah. You know. But anyway.
So you are slowly approaching the.
I said to myself that, for instance, but the interesting part is about that. When I come to Holy Land from Australia, just after, you know, this what happened with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I start searching why this land is so holy. So I went to several different places in the Holy Land, and of course I couldn't find that why. And then I come to the place where the Last Supper took place.
Mm-hmm.
And down below, it was the house of David, and the tomb of David is over there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I was, you know, I felt like my soul is falling to pieces. I felt, you know, like incredible humbleness.
Mm-hmm.
My whole personality was just shivering and falling to pieces.
Mm.
And I didn't know really what happened to me. I thought, man, maybe too much sun or something like that. Maybe I am too tired. Okay, I will come to tomorrow and see what will happen. And I come the next day, and exactly the same thing happened to me again. And I said, "Oh my God, this is something unbelievable."
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at that time I was still a Roman Catholic, And then I start talking with some Franciscan monk, but I wasn't satisfied with what...
Over there in Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And then the Greek Orthodox monk was passing, and I start talking to him, and he said, look, all your problems you have, nobody will help you here in Jerusalem. Nobody. You should go to Holy Mountain. Take the boat, go to Haifa, from Haifa to Piraeus, from Piraeus, and so on and so on. So when he told me this, I just did that what he advised me to do. Okay. On the boat, when I was on the boat, I met the Canadian man in a civilian clothes, mm-hmm. but he was the priest. Mm-hmm. He was the priest himself.
Mm-hmm. What kind of priest?
A priest, not Roman Catholic, he was a...
some of those Protestant denominations.
Protestant. And of course he started talking to me, and he said, you know, I come to Jerusalem because I wanted to know why this land is so holy. And I've been in several places over there, I didn't feel anything. And then I come to this very same place where I was, and he said, and I felt such a tremendous humbleness over there, and I was totally stunned because he was telling me my story. I didn't interrupt, I didn't say one word, mm-hmm. and actually he tell me exactly the same story what happened to me. So I accepted like the God grace, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. To strengthen me, you know, with what really happened to me. Mm-hmm. And then of course I come to Holy Mountain, and in a Holy Mountain I said to myself, oh, I go to Simonopetra, or maybe there, or maybe there, because on the boat, you know, some people been thinking, this monastery is very, very good, this monastery is very good, this, okay. So I said, of course, I first have to go to Karyes. I went to Karyes. At the time I was around about 40, something like that, mm-hmm. and I was very strong and energetic man, and when I was in Karyes, all of a sudden I felt so tired. My God, I just couldn't, hardly was walking. So I said, no, I'm not going to any all this distance, the monasteries. I go to the closest one, you know, and I will sort of have a rest. Yeah. So I went to Kutlamusiyo Monastery. Mm-hmm. Okay. And at the door of the Kutlamusiyo Monastery was standing one elderly monk, which was about over 60 or something like that, and I greet him in English, and he asked me, are you Orthodox? I said, no, I'm not, but in the heart I am. And he said, he really liked it, and he said, go to Arkhondariki and have a rest. So I went to Arkhondariki
guest house,
a guest house, mm-hmm. and of course my heart was just like a stone, you know. Mm-hmm. I couldn't pray, you know. Anyway, I try, you know, what the pilgrim uh-huh. did before, but I couldn't. For some time it was going on, but afterwards, you know, just blink, you know, just my heart couldn't pray anymore. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I lie down on the bed, and I feel my heart is praying by itself. And I said, oh my God, this is something incredible, you know. So when they start ringing on the evening service, mm-hmm. I come down and I ask some monks, who is this man? Who is this man? You know? Yes. The one who was standing in the, uh-huh. In the gate. And they said, this is the Father Yosef, our Yeronda. Uh-huh.
The Father Superior.
No. Elder.
Elder.
So, of course, after, it didn't mean this name anything to me, but after the some years, I found out that it was one of the best, at that time, mm-hmm. spiritual fathers on the Holy Mountain. Mm-hmm. It was a Father Yosef Vatopetsky who...
Oh, the one from Vatopedi.
Yes,
oh,
from
really?
Vatopedi.
Uh-huh, he was the one... From Yosef the Hesychast.
Yes. Ah. So he was the one who I met the first man on a holy mountain.
Bingo.
Bingo, yes, of course. So, when I felt, you know, such an incredible grace of the prayer of this man, mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to go anywhere. Why should I? You know? So I stayed there mm-hmm. for more than 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ah,
and apparently, after some time, I decide to become Orthodox, mm-hmm. and they baptize me over there. It was in 1982.
Mm-hmm. You were 40 years old.
Yes. So, it was such a tremendous God grace for what really happened to me.
Mm-hmm. But at that time, you were living in Australia.
Yes, uh-huh. Of course.
Okay, but you just came for...
Yes, I just come for a short, let's say, visit. And it took me 2 years. Of course, I would stay much longer, but mm-hmm. apparently...
You were a novice or just a like kind of visitor?
I was novice.
Oh, you were novice.
Yeah, I was a novice.
Okay.
And of course, the Father Superior was Father Christodoulou.
Mm-hmm. Of the. You were in Kasuk, in Mantia?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm.
But apparently afterwards I had some problem with my stomachs and things like that, you know, mm-hmm. and I just couldn't...
Yeah, life is not easy on Holy Mountain.
No, of course not. Mm-hmm. So I left for the... I went back to Australia.
Where did you live in Australia?
In Perth.
Perth.
The nicest city in Australia.
Really?
Especially for several reasons, mm-hmm. because the weather is the best in Australia, mm-hmm. dry and hot, which is very good for health.
Yes,
and also it's not when I come to Western Australia, it was just over in Perth over 300,000 people, mm-hmm. which was not overcrowded really. And it's beautiful, it's lying down in...
On the ocean? By the ocean?
Not quite. Uh-huh. It's about, let's say, 15 kilometers from the seashore, but the main port is Fremantle over there, mm-hmm. which is... But anyway, the weather is fantastic. People are very friendly mm-hmm. and hardworking also, yes. you know, helpful mm-hmm. and so on.
So did you continue? What was your life? You continue to work, you know, to be
Yes, I continue to work. You know, I was working in the, let's say, in mining industry because the money was over there. Mm-hmm.
But when we met last time, you mentioned, I think you were not Orthodox at the time, that you were thinking about God, looking, searching, and then when you saw the shroud, the picture of Christ.
The shroud. I was passing.
Tell me about that.
I was passing through.
You were not Orthodox yet.
Not Orthodox yet.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Actually, I was passing through the street. I was in first, and I was looking in at the shop windows, and there was the books with religious books, and I saw the Christ face from the shroud, which I never saw before. Mm-hmm. And I stood up, and I was absolutely stunned, because it made such a powerful impression on me, and I knew deep in the heart that it was Christ himself. And immediately I went to the store, and I bought this picture, and I keep it as my treasure.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, you mentioned that you were also studying Far East religions. Were you ever active in some of those meditations? What was your experience about that?
Father, I wasn't really practicing it, mm-hmm. but I was reading the books, mm-hmm. Especially, let's say, the book says self-realization. What does it mean, self-realization? That means that I can realize, make myself happy and become like a god or something like that, just by my own power of will. Mm-hmm. And everything is just in this very word, self-realization. Mm-hmm. But the Christ say, you can't do nothing without me. So, of course, I was reading all these books, sometime to the one point, and I was dropping, throwing in the rubbish, taking another one and another one and another one, but
you couldn't realize yourself this
way. Just because, you know, as I mentioned to you before, I had a feeling that Christ is somewhere in the back of my
consciousness.
So that's really what, for instance, yoga. I said to myself, okay, if yoga would be really a way to self-realization or something like that, so that's, the Christ would be the best yogin. He would make the best kind of position and everything, but he never was interested in this kind of you know, exercises.
Fakir stuff.
Yes. So, as I said, I think I am very grateful to prayers of my mother. Mm.
So let's continue. You are coming back from Holy Mountain to Perth again, and how is your life going on further?
Well, when I sort of come back to Perth...
So your wife was not there anymore?
Yeah, she was there.
She was there.
She was
waiting
there
for you? We were together?
Yes, we were together. Uh-huh. And of course... she was actually the painter. She was painting. Mm-hmm. And apparently we had a very nice house, living in a very nice suburb and so on and so on. So she didn't really have to, she never had any financial worries and things like that. And I could travel there and there. And anyway, after some time, I said to myself, well, because it was this, at the time, this kind of perestroika. Mm-hmm. So I said, well...
Perestroika where, in Australia?
No, in
Russia.
Poland.
In Russia. Poland.
Yeah, in Poland and Russia and all these post-communist countries.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I said, okay, I will go back to Poland and probably I will establish my own business. Mm-hmm. Which I did. I started a construction business in Poland, which was very, very successful.
In Warsaw.
Warsaw. and it was very successful.
And it was in the late 80s or 90s?
Late 80s, 90s, and so on.
Uh-huh.
And, of course...
You went there together with your wife?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, I come first and then my wife, because she stayed in Australia with the house and all the other things. Mm-hmm. And we had to do, for instance, to sell...
But in general, you were together, right?
Yes.
Husband and wife.
And so, actually, I started the business. When I established some my business, of course, my wife joined me.
Mm-hmm.
And we started living together. And so...
But as Orthodox... were you able to practice your faith?
Did you go to the church? Able to practice Orthodoxy, but I wasn't really satisfied with this kind of Orthodoxy, which was in Poland practiced, because like in Holy Mountain we were, for every day was a liturgy.
Oh, of course, it's a monastery. Yes.
And I was really... very happy with this kind of the life, except that my body couldn't, especially my stomach couldn't accept all this hardship.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. But there was there were churches, Orthodox churches in Warsaw.
Yes, of course.
And I was never there, but that's why I'm asking.
Yes, and Metropolitan of Sava was educated in Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Connections between Poland and mm-hmm. Serbia.
Mm-hmm. And your wife was never actually interested in Orthodox?
Never.
Did she make any obstacles to you, or she didn't care?
Well, she was trying to make some obstacles, but she knew that practically she had no chance, you know, because I was sort of crazy about Orthodoxy, you know. Of course, I was visiting from time to time Holy Mountain. Mm-hmm. I visited in England Father Sofroni.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I visited...
You knew him?
Yes, and I visited, when I was in Holy Mountain on several occasions, of course I was visiting Father Paisie, because he was living nearby the monastery of Kutla Musio.
Right.
And on every holiday he used to come to us, and I visited him in his koliva as well, and I met also Father Ephrem, who established several monasteries in the United States. Also I had an opportunity to meet another Father Ephrem of Katanakia, and he gave me even
great pillars.
Yes, he gave me the name Nicholas.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He gave you the name.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, of course, the life on Holy Mountain was absolutely, totally different, because it was no jeeps, no electricity, no telephones.
Yes.
Actually, the donkeys and cold water and things like that, you know. And yet it was so many holy fathers, you know. And so...
Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Some of them say it's the same. What do you think?
What is the same?
Well, today, like with jeeps, telephones, laptops, they say it doesn't really influence the monastic life. What do you think?
I think it does.
You think it does?
I think it does, especially, you see, because I heard something like in Roman Catholic, head of Roman Catholic Church, of course, is a Pope. Yes. And somebody asked him what to do in order to destroy the Orthodox life on Holy Mountain. Mm-hmm. And he said, just give him plenty of money.
And that happened.
And that happened. Mm.
That's right. Yeah. It has strong power, much stronger than Turkish sword.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
So this is...
not only on Holy Mountain, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Monastic life is really in danger with a lot of comfort.
Yes.
And every real Christian in general.
Yes. Same thing in Russia.
Yeah.
Mm. I traveled to...
You were there also?
Yeah, I've been, let's say, in Pskovsko-Pechersk Lavra, which make a very, very, very powerful impression on me.
With those caves.
Ooh.
Many holy relics.
I met Father Jovan Christiankin over there. Mm-hmm. And but you should see how really in Russia they have such a powerful strength of the belief.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
They're famous.
On the West we just can't imagine how really powerful Russian are strong believers. Fantastic. And just because I think the Russian spiritual life is very, very deeply rooted in the Christ teaching. And of course the Russians practicing it. They practicing it for very, very long time, for centuries. And the God is protecting them and will protect them in the future just as well. But like on the contrary, the anti-church is sort of believing in something opposite. Mm.
We'll come to this point. Tell us now, how does it go further on? I mean, you went back to Warsaw, to Poland, you were a businessman, so what else? What happened then?
Well, what happened then? Actually, I come to the point, Father, that it's very difficult to start some business venture. But even more difficult is to finish.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right. You're catched.
Yes. Yeah. Even more difficult is to finish it. Because you are entangled in so many different people, situations, connections, and so on and so on. And then all of a sudden I noticed that, you know, I am entrapped. Mm. So where is the space for my God which I found? Where is the space for this? Very little left. So I was frightened. So I said, okay, I have to do something immediately. And I was praying to God to help me. And God did help me. And of course, I went back to the monastery, to Holy Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the monastery of Vatopedi, and I was staying there for about not quite a year.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you quit your affairs in Poland?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was very difficult for me because this monastery was really overcrowded.
Yeah.
It was such a terrible sort of... of course, for the young people, it's excellent monastery. Perfect.
Absolutely, yeah. You're right.
But for the men of my age,
mm-hmm.
not so.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the monastery of Hilandar, and I was staying in the monastery of Hilandar over 1 year.
When was that?
No, it was about 5 years ago. Yes, and I stayed in the monastery of Hilandar for over... Altogether, Vatopet and Hilandar, it took me 2 years again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very happy in the monastery of Hilandar because it's absolutely exceptional blessing of the Mother of God in this very monastery.
Mm-hmm.
It's something unbelievable. There is no other monastery on Holy Mountain where is such a powerful blessing of the Mother of the God. And this is not only my opinion. But after some time I get some, for instance, posłuszanie,
mm-hmm.
To work in obedience, to work in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And in the kitchen I just couldn't work because I realize, for instance, when such a very big gas burners are burning, I was sort of so tired, I couldn't move my legs, I couldn't move, and no monks would like to work over there in the kitchen.
Burning out the oxygen.
Yeah, burning out the oxygen, I didn't know, and I realized all of a sudden that this is not enough oxygen over there. So I said to Father Superior that this is not good. Every monk who comes working over there becomes very, very nervous.
Mm.
But for me, I was very, very tired.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
I said, no, this is impossible. I won't be able to. And step by step, I decided to move out of Holy Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I went to Father Yosef. I spoke with my wife if she would like to go with me to Russia, to a monastery of Serafim Sarovsky, Divyevo.
For a visit or just to stay there?
To stay there.
Uh-huh.
And she said, yes, I would like to go there and I would want to become an Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I went to Father Yosef from Vatopet and asked him for blessing. And also I asked another father from Russia, Raphael, the little one.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him for blessing. He said, this is excellent, you can go. So I was so happy and joyful, I was jumping on the rocks and everything, you know. And I come to Russia, I come to Warsaw, I took my wife to Divievo, I bought the accommodation over there, and we had a very fantastic reception over there, because everything was prepared, you know.
In advance.
In advance, yes. And it was the Mother Superior Sergia over there. Fantastic lady. She was a dentist. Her profession was the dentist. And of course, we spent quite some time over there. And my wife said, I don't want to be Orthodox. And of course I was shocked again. So I come back, and so I went to one very holy man. He's from Belorussia. His name is Father Serafin. He's a man of prayer, and he make the miracles and things like that, you know. And I asked him what to do in this case. What to do?
This happened in Russia or back in Poland?
Back in Poland. Because Father Serafin, he's has his own monastery on almost on the border of the Belorussia and Poland. Very close, you know. About 20 kilometers from the Polish border. So I went to him, and he said, you wait, maybe she will change her mind. So I waited, and then I had enough. I said, enough is enough. And I said to myself, okay. I met one monk in Holy Mountain. His name was Father Nicodemus, and he was in charge. He used to study in Thessalonica. We became very good friends, and he was in charge in a monastery, Father Superior. He was Father Superior in a monastery of Dai Baba Monastery. So I said to myself, I go and I visit him. I went to Dai Baba Monastery, but actually he wasn't there. He just was shifted somewhere to Serbia.
I know that, you know, to whom you were talking about.
Yes, and so I went to the Cetinia monastery.
Now we are talking about Montenegro.
Yes. To Cetinia, and I talked with Metropolitan Amphilochia about Father Nicodemus, but Metropolitan Amphilochia told me that I'd be more happy in the skit of Jovan Do, which means he gave me the blessing to stay here. So of course I accepted again, like God grace. That's why I'm here.
So how do you like it here? What do you think about monastic life here? It's not Holy Mountain.
It's not Holy Mountain, but then again, Father,
for your age maybe it's good.
For my age, it's much more peaceful than, because like say in 30 years ago or more, the monastic life on the Holy Mountain was very good, because not overcrowded. It wasn't so many visitors.
Yes.
The life was much harder, and yet it was this some very, very special bonds between the brothers and fathers and so on and so on. But of course, I must say, despite of all this, of course, in any monastery there are some good and bad points of view, but I must say that I have a very special, I should say, I just don't have a right word because...
You're not a champion?
Yes, actually, Father Amfilochie is a very special man of prayer, and probably it would be very, very difficult to find somebody like that in the Holy Mountain or anywhere else on the world. So from this point of view, I am very happy and satisfied to be here, because again, I think this is the God will in order to help me to finish my worldly life the best possible way.
Yes. Did you finish your affairs in the world? Are you, do
yes.
you still have to go back, or you're...
Actually, I still have few, maybe very little things, but I don't really have to go there. Maybe my wife, she will come here and she will bring me something which is necessary to have. Because actually when I was in Rome, so many things, my personal things were stolen. Or when I was traveling in the car, and of course, in order to get all these documents for the police registration and things like that, I would have to have it.
Brother Nikolai, you are in good age and you have a great life experience. But tell us now a little bit, how do you see today's world and the politics, so-called conspiracy theory? Is it real or is it just imagination? Where does this world go? And how do you see Australia, Europe, America, you know,
well,
like in a reasonable way?
First of all, I think the world politics is, I think, like watching all the sciences. Practically, they working for the actually the society is going to self-destruction. Why? Because they are empty without religion, without Christ. The Christ said, "Without me, you can do nothing." But what's more, they doing self-destruction. And so the very same thing applies to the world politics. Politicians are just non-believers. They actually, they think they can do everything by themselves, by their own intelligence, by their own ability to govern people and to lead them in the, some better future. But actually, there is no better future. From my point of view, when I see the society is really going from bad to worst. So,
once you mentioned anti-church, what do you mean by that?
Well, anti-church is something like the countries like America, Australia, England. This is the country where most probably the anti-church is most powerful. But of course it's existing practically in every country, European country. But not to such a big degree. And anti-church is simply opposing to the true God.
Do you think it's that's something chaotic, chaos, or it is by purpose? Do they know what they do?
I think they know what they do. They following a very special program, and this program is of course a religious program. Because they believe in the devil, but we believe in a God. So finally, it has to come to some final point. And there are some people which are against the God. They want to show their powers. They have practically all the money they want, all the weapons they can produce, and so on, and so on. But on the other hand, there are people like, for instance, like in Russia, they believing that they have such a long tradition in believing in the true God. And I think the crazy thing about the anti-church is that they want to destroy the true God which created everything, the whole universe, the man and everything, and suffer for them. He was crucified and everything. And this is some absolutely devilish logic which the so many people are following. For me, it's not understandable.
And what do you think about this crisis in Ukraine?
Well, I think this crisis which is taking place right now in Ukraine, it will grow bigger and bigger and bigger till we'll come to the point that the war, Third World War, will start it. Just because, for instance, let's I remember when it was the Cuban crisis, and the Russians come to the Cuba. It was such a big row, you know, because they come very close to America, United States of America. But Americans come to Russia practically right now.
Yeah.
Ukraine is the part of the Russia. Always been part of the Russia. So, if they took the steps, such a dangerous steps,
they're ready for more,
of course,
for anything. So, man didn't learn anything from previous wars.
No.
Maybe they don't want to. They think we failed. This time we're going to make it.
Father, I think the man simply is sick because has not enough love in his heart. Without love, everything must die. Because the love is the most powerful energy which really creates everything. Everything. Without love, everything. The most intelligent men and most intelligent empires and everything must die. And that's it. And we are very, very happy that our God is love. So even if we die, even if we come through most terrible experiences, and become even martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. We know that we will be resurrected,
yes,
like our God did. Yes.
When we see that things don't go in a good direction today's world,
not at all,
and that some imagination peace is not going to happen. What do you think about these technical scientific army projects, the secret that they do here, there, whatever? You mentioned once that there was a secret project in Australia, in this deserted part of it. What did they were doing there? What did they were searching about?
Anti-gravity.
Uh-huh.
And also how to make the earthquakes, mm-hmm, and things like that. All this was actually invented by Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
All this very basic knowledge was invented by Nikola Tesla, and he was an exceptionally intelligent man and the greatest inventor,
mm-hmm,
of probably in the whole humanity.
Yeah.
Actually, I can't recall anyone who invents so many
patents
mm-hmm, and very dangerous patents.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to say if he was sent to Earth by God or by devil.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. But it all depends on us.
Yes.
I mean, he just invented. And
yes.
Is it like a knife? You can use it,
yes,
to cut a piece of bread and to feed yourself and your brother?
Absolutely.
Or to slaughter him?
Absolutely. Because, Father, we must remember that, for instance, since, let's say, when he came to this earth, it's such a big growth in the population.
Mm-hmm.
And he invented so many things like fertilizers, you
mm-hmm
know.
Mm-hmm.
He invented electrical current, and without this, such a huge amount of people would be very, very difficult to
survive, to live.
Yes,
yeah,
yes. So mm-hmm I absolutely agree with your point of view.
Yeah.
Depending, you know, how we using the knife.
Yeah. And what do you think about these stories that today all these climate changes are somehow controlled? What do you think? Is this just a conspiracy theory, or there is maybe something else in it?
Well, conspiracy theory. Again, Nikola Tesla was dealing with this sort of subject,
mm-hmm,
and since then, a lot of scientists took, for instance, this subject into consideration, and they make so many patents,
mm-hmm,
as far as the weather control
mm-hmm
link can be made.
Yeah, and we see, let's say today is July the 14th or something like this.
Yes.
Take a look at the weather. We live in a southern part of Europe.
It's not normal.
It's absolutely not anything but normal.
Anything but normal.
Yes. So we see that the weather is changing, and they say that these ozone holes are bigger and bigger in
no,
in the
this
atmosphere.
Is absolutely rubbish.
Yeah.
This is rubbish.
Yeah. What do you think about it?
I think this is it's all experiments with this. You can even read in the internet about the, if you put in the internet chemtrails, you can see so many information about it, and also special pictures how these clouds are forming and so on and so on, and what actually happens. So whoever wants to find out about it, we have nowadays such a fantastic tool, which is internet, and you can find out, no problem.
Yeah. Now, when we are on this topic about this mysterious things that happen in the world, what do you think about World Trade Center, the twins? You know, remember when they were torn down by this, Bin Laden's attacks? Some people say it is made by the United States. Some people say no, that's nonsense. The Islamic radicals did this.
Well, Father, first of all, you must understand that World Trade Center, it was in America. The whole America was World Trade Center.
That's a good point.
And they had a very big buildings over there. Yeah. Like a symbol of the United States activities. Yeah. And power,
yes,
and everything, and of course, who was controlling it? Freemasons.
So they say.
And once this thing was destroyed, which means the world center was shifted to the other part of the world. Where?
Where?
To China. And that's it. It was the very symbolic thing to do it, just like the move in the chest play. We're shifting this figure in a different position in order to make the shachmat to Russia.
But the players are the same, basically.
It's the same, of course.
Yeah, I never thought about that. But, okay, we are coming basically to the conclusion of this very interesting conversation. But where is the exit of this whole madness that we are living in?
Where is the... What?
The exit, the solution.
Solution. Solution?
The only one.
The only solution is... it's only in the Christ.
Yeah. Even if they destroy our bodies, maybe that can happen.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You see... For instance,
but the people, they care for their bodies. It's only what they have, they think that.
Look, for instance, if you a sick person, right?
Yes.
So what do you do if you're very sick? You go to hospital.
Yes.
What the doctor does to you? They put you on the operating table and they make the operation. Yes. You just have to trust him, right?
Yes.
And we trust in the Christ.
Yes.
And even, you know, that the doctor make the operation and you survive, okay. If you don't, the God will take care of you, right?
Yes.
So, it's like going to operation. It's like going to operation. We have to trust first of all, before you going to operation, you have to cross yourself, pray to God, so the doctor will do the good job.
Yes.
And if you have to come through the very traumatic experiences, we have to cross ourselves, trust to the God, and see what happened.
Yes. And we believe we will alive forever.
Yes.
Yes. Brother Nikolai, Mr. Kush, is that what you
said? Yes, yes.
It was a great pleasure for me to have this conversation with you, because we do not much each other, but we met a few times.
Yes.
But now we really became friends, and I'm very glad. So I hope that people all over the world who are going to listen to this will have a certain benefit for their souls.
I hope so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Father.
Thank you for listening Radio Svetigora, the radio station of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of Montenegro and the Seaside. Blessed by His High Eminence, Metropolitan Amphilochia.